Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm John Harwood, and this is On Point.
Willie Taylor, youthful lover, full of love and loyalty. Just as he was about to be married, pressed he was and sent to sea. Ride the ring, rattle-dee-oh, rattle-diddle-day, tee, rattle-diddle-day.
What you just heard is part of an intricate storytelling tradition that stretched across the Atlantic Ocean centuries ago and found root in the Appalachian Mountains of America. A new Grammy-nominated album aims to preserve that tradition. This hour on Point, the Ballads of Appalachia. You can join us on air or online. Have you heard these songs? What do they evoke for you? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Now, joining me now from Asheville, North Carolina, is Ted Olson. He's a music historian and professor of Appalachian Studies at East Tennessee State University. He's produced and written liner notes for many documentary albums of Appalachian music. The latest album he produced, Big Ben Killing, The Appalachian Ballad Tradition, is nominated for a Grammy for Best Album Notes. Ted, welcome to On Point.
Glad to be here, John. Thank you.
Ted, first of all, let me establish my kinship with you geographically. I've got family in Asheville and Waynesville, spent a lot of time at Lake Junaluska, which you may be familiar with nearby there. And I guess I'd want to start by asking you how you got into the area of specialization that you did. How did Appalachian ballads become your thing?
Well, I grew up during the Appalachian kind of folk revival, which was kind of a subset of the American folk music urban revival in the 60s and 70s. And I actually grew up in Washington, D.C., where a lot of expat Appalachian people had relocated. And I met a number of Appalachian musicians, such as Hazel Dickens and John Jackson and some others. And these folks sang Appalachian music, and ballads were the, shall we say, the genre of music that they kept alive in their lives that I connected with, because those ballads told age-old stories that I felt were quite timeless and universal. And
so the music pulled you there?
The music pulled me here, exactly. And as an educator, I feel that ballads are a wonderful teaching opportunity to younger generations to learn about history and culture and values and such. So ballads are timeless.
Are you yourself a musician?
I am. I've performed over the years in a number of venues around the United States and quite heavily around Appalachia. And I, for a number of years, was one of the few singers, I suppose, at some of the bluegrass festivals that I performed at who specialized in ballads. Ballads are quite lengthy. It does require a real commitment to keep all those verses memorized and in the proper sequence to tell a good story. But I'm very dedicated to this tradition. And this project allowed me to connect with other ballad singers and some wonderful, masterful ballad singers from around the English-speaking world volunteered their time to realize this album.
Well, let's talk about one of those stories and play a bit from a song called Eggs and Marrowbone by Jody Stecker and Kate Brislin. Take a listen. We'll talk on the other side.
The doctor wrote a letter and he signed it with his hand. He sent it to the old man so to let him understand.
Sink me on the lake, oh, carry me away.
She fed him eggs and marrowbone, and he did sup them all. He said, I'm so doggone blind that I can't see you at all.
Sing me on the lane, oh, carry me away.
So
Ted Olson, tell our listeners what they heard, where it came from, what's significant about that song to you.
Well, of course, Jody Stecker and Kate Brislin sang this for this album specifically to support Great Smoky Mountains National Park. This is a fundraising album for the Great Smoky Mountains Park. And they loved this ballad because of the powerful story that it told. The ballad itself dates back to probably 4 or 5 centuries. It was collected in England, Scotland, Ireland, and in the United States and Canada. And it was also collected in 1916, very close to here in outside of Asheville, North Carolina, by the great English folklorist and ballad collector Cecil Sharp. And it was titled at that time The Rich Old Lady. And what's important is that each version of a ballad tells a slightly different version of the story. And in essence, the singer kind of invests him or herself in telling the story his or her own way. And so it's when you hear a ballad performance, you're getting a window into somebody's perception of the world. And Jody and Kate certainly got deeply inside that narrative and told it with great conviction, and it's quite a tragic song.
Well, we're fortunate to be able to peer through one of those windows with an artist live in just a moment. Joining us from Richmond, Kentucky, from WEKU, is Carol Elizabeth Jones. She's sung traditional mountain music and Appalachian ballads for a long time. She's taken this music all over the world, touring in Africa and Southeast Asia as a cultural ambassador for the U.S. Information Agency, and she's also featured on this album. Carol Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, you're featured singing a ballad called Barbary Allen. It's an old world song with British origins. Would you sing it for us live?
I'd be happy to. I'm going to get a pitch just so that I know exactly where I am. All in the merry month of May, when the green buds they were swelling, young William Green on his deathbed lay for the love of Barbary Allen. He sent his servant to the town, to the place where he was dwelling, saying, my master's sick and he sent for you, if your name be Barbary Allen. So slow-la, she got up, and slow-la, she drew nigh him. And all she said when she got there, young man, I think you're dying. Don't you remember in yonder town, a-drinking? You passed your glass to the ladies all, and you slighted Barbary Allen. Yes, I remember in yonder town a-drinking. I gave my health to the ladies all around, but my heart to Barbary Allen. Oh, mother, go make my bed, make it both long and narrow. Young William's died for me today, and I'll die for him tomorrow. Oh, she was buried neath the old church tower, and he was buried anigh her. And out of his bosom drew a red, red rose, out of Barbary's grew a briar. They grew and grew up the old church tower till they could grow no higher. They locked up tight in a true lover's knot. Red rose grew round the briar.
Absolutely beautiful. A true lover's knot. Carol Elizabeth, thank you so much for singing that for us. And let me ask you, what does that song mean to you?
Well, I don't know. I've tried to die of a broken heart. It's a lot harder than that.
Well, I think many people have.
Oh, but, you know, I do love that, you know, that the result is so extreme. It was a misunderstanding. She thought that he overlooked her when he was, you know, giving his regards to the ladies at the bar. But really, he was giving her his whole heart. She just didn't realize it. But he was too far gone by then.
Is that one of the songs that's hundreds of years old
yes.
that's been passed down from... Where, Britain, Scotland?
Yeah, I would say Britain. And this particular version comes from Gene Ritchie.
And Gene Ritchie, talk about who she is and the impressions she's made on you.
She came from a large family in East Kentucky, and they were all singers and ballad singers. And so I knew her some growing up and heard her sing a whole lot. And
is she still living or no?
No, she passed away in the last couple years, yeah. But she's very, very well known. And Alan Lomax collected her in New York City in the 40s. And I just imagine when he stumbled on her, he must have just about died.
Carol Elizabeth, stay right there. Ted Olson, too. You can join the conversation. What do you hear in this music? Is there a ballad tradition in your culture? Tell us about it. We're at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Here's Bill and the Bells with the song Mr. Frog Went A-Courtin'. I'm John Harwood, and this is On Point.
Frog went swimming across the lake, Mr. Frog went swimming across the lake. He got swallowed by a big black snake, This puts an end to the 1, 2, 3, The frog and the flea and the bumblebee,
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
Hey, it's Maria Hinojosa, host of NPR's Latino USA, the podcast that takes you inside the Latino conversation. Each week, we'll take you into one story that will fascinate and often surprise you. Listen to Latino USA on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Why forbid ye maidens are that weird gold in your hair to come or go by Carter Hall for young Tamlane is there.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood. That's Tam Lynn by Archie Fisher, a ballad from the Scottish Borders that has a magical quality. It's featured on the Grammy-nominated album Big Ben Killing, the Appalachian Ballad Tradition. We're talking about and listening to Appalachian ballads this hour. You can join the conversation. Are you part of this music community? Has the oral tradition of passing on stories changed? Has it lost something in today's world? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And listeners, you can head to our website, onpointradio.org, for a playlist with all of the songs that we're featuring today. Ted Olson's with me from Asheville, North Carolina. He's music historian, professor of Appalachian Studies at East Tennessee State University, and producer of the Grammy-nominated album Big Ben Killing, the Appalachian Ballad Tradition. And from Richmond, Kentucky, Carol Elizabeth Jones. She's a musician from this ballad tradition and is featured on this album. Ted, I want to start with a point that we alluded to in that introduction there, which is, what is the relevance and the vibrancy of this music today when technology has changed how people consume music and pass it on? And is this something that still has more than a tiny audience?
We addressed that very issue in the liner notes. There was a scholar, he's still active today, in fact, a retired professor at East Tennessee State University, where I work, named Thomas Burton. Thomas Burton collected a lot of ballads in the 60s and 70s. And during that whole process, and of course he collected ballads on the borders between Tennessee and North Carolina, principally, he was worried that this wonderful ancient tradition was in decline. But happily, it does appear that the tradition is making a resurgence. And in part, that's because younger people are listening to wonderful performers of today, people such as Carol Elizabeth Jones and the other artists on our album and others who aren't on our album, who sing ballads wonderfully. Younger musicians are emulating that and realizing that ballads, while they're not necessarily promoted heavily within the record industry per se, that they exist, they have their own life within communities, within families. There are a number of families, for example, in Western North Carolina that are famously keeping family ballad traditions alive, and several of those artists are featured on Big Bend Killing. And so we have a program at East Tennessee State called the Bluegrass Old Time and Country Music Studies Program. And a number of the people who performed on this album who sang ballads were from the program and are younger artists who are trying to keep the ballad tradition alive. So I would say it's kind of coming back. And I think that's all for the good, because these stories are too universal and too beautiful to lose. As I said earlier, the ballads are very lengthy, and it's a challenging tradition to keep alive. But I think people are putting out the effort, and I think we'll start seeing more and more younger people returning to the ballad tradition.
Let's bring our listeners into the conversation. Timothy is calling on the line from Elizabethtown, Tennessee. Timothy, welcome to the show.
Greetings from Elizabethton, Carter County, Tennessee.
Please go ahead.
I am an Episcopal priest. At 10th, 11th, we're not quite sure, but my family's been here in Elizabethton and Carter County, deep in the southern Appalachians, next door to East Tennessee State. And I, after about a 30-year absence, have returned home to my boyhood home and listening to the music, remembering these ballads from way back up on Stony Creek at the foot of a big mountain here, leading into North Carolina, at great funerals, political bridge celebrations at our great covered bridge in Elizabethton. And we're facing an opioid crisis, poverty, which we've always had, split families, which we've had, grandmothers, great-grandmoms, taking the children of those going into jail for their offenses and so forth. And I wonder, is there anything that I feel instinctively that the ballad somehow, some way could help explain, could help soothe, could help rescue so many families and peoples who are so very hurt, not just by the opioid epidemic, but certainly that, as we're challenged all over the place in this part of southern Appalachia and north.
Timothy, thanks so much for your call. Carol Elizabeth, when you perform, do you hope to soothe the kinds of families that Timothy was just talking about who are suffering?
Phew, that's a tough one. And the question is, are they going to be the ones who have come to the concert, you know? But I think that where the ballad tradition can be really powerful is that it brings people together. to commune, basically. And when people are together listening to ballads, they have to listen well, because if you're not listening to the story, it just becomes a really long song. So I think that that's something that we could really use in this day and time, you know, being brought together, to be together, and also to listen really carefully.
Well, I think we'd like to listen very carefully to another live performance, if you're up for it. There's a song called Lord Bateman, which I think you're going to perform. Could you just tell us give us a brief summary of what we're hearing and then perform it, please?
Sure. This is a very rare ballad because everybody in this story ends up happily. That never happens.
Wonderful.
And no one dies. No one
very
dies.
Very good. Okay. Let's hear it.
Okay. I'm going to get a quick pitch and then I'll sing it for you. Lord Bateman was a noble soldier. He thought himself of high degree, but he would not rest nor be contented until he'd sailed the old South Sea. He sailed to the east and he sailed to the westward. He sailed all over to the Turkish shore. There he got caught and put in prison, never to be released anymore. The Turk, he had a lovely daughter, and she was fair as she could be. She stole the key to her father's prison and swore Lord Bateman she'd set free. They made a vow, they made a promise, for 7 long years to make it stand, that he would marry no other woman, and she would marry no other man. Now 7 long years had rolled around. Those 7 long years seemed like 29. She sailed to the east and she sailed to the westward and swore Lord Bateman she'd go find. Oh, is this not Lord Bateman's castle? And is his lordship not within? Oh, yes, said the gay young porter. He's just now bringing his new bride in. Then up spoke the new bride's mother. To Lord Bateman she spoke free, said, what's to become of my only daughter, who's just become a bride to thee? She came to me with a horse and saddle, and she'll go home with a coach and three. I'll not forsake my Turkish lady who saved me from my slavery.
Lovely. Thank you so much. Carol Elizabeth, is that a song that is always performed a cappella, or is that just how you're doing it today by yourself?
This one, I have always heard it as a cappella, yeah. And I do want to say that I had to shorten all these songs for the radio. They could go on much longer.
Understood. Now, let me ask you about one performance aspect that I was reading about last night in preparing for the show. And it described an expectation that the singer not display a lot of affect when singing the song, even if it's an anguishing or dark or difficult song, with the idea that the singer does not detract from the actual story with his or her own demonstrativeness. Is that something that you is that an imperative that you followed in your performing?
Yeah, I think I must have absorbed that along the way, because you know it's pretty level. The performance is pretty level, even with the ornaments that you sing. You don't vary them up a whole lot unless maybe the lyrics call for it. just because of the way they lay on the line. But you're not going to sing with great drama, you know, if something in particular happens. You're just the conveyor of the story.
Hmm. All right, let's bring another listener in. Matt's on the line from Detroit, Michigan. Matt, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, John. Thanks for taking my call, and thank you for doing a program on this, I think, incredibly amazing subject. I make my living also teaching and going out and performing this kind of music. And one of the things that I notice is that it's really a patriotic act. There are so many other countries in the world who covet their music as part of their history, and it's really good to see that America is starting to pay a little more attention to the roots of these stories of what makes us who we are. So I just appreciate you doing that. And I can listen to Carol Elizabeth sing all day long. I play her music on my radio program. And it's, you know, NPR is keeping this music alive through a network of folk music radio programs as well, which I think is terrific.
Matt, do you find audiences for this outside of the South, outside of Appalachia?
Yeah, well, the music informs all of it, you know, and so many people came up from the South and settled in places like Detroit and Chicago that the music has traveled up here as well. But then you go into places like the Upper Peninsula in Michigan and you find traditions of Scandinavian music and people who have moved there and settled there, you know, bringing those ballads there as well. It's just a fascinating thing to see how these things travel, not just from Europe to America, but all over America.
Wonderful. Matt, thanks so much for your call. I want to bring in another caller. Cynthia is on the line from Denver, North Carolina. Cynthia, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I will tell a little bit about me really quickly. I didn't grow up with this tradition, but I moved to North Carolina about 25 years ago and fell in love with old-time music. And I started a group of 8 women in my neighborhood, and we all play the mountain dulcimer, and we try to sing ballads. But I wanted to say that ballad singing is being taught at many places around the country, so that if you didn't grow up with the tradition but you love the ballads, I first took a class with Carol, I believe it was at Swannanoa, which is at Warren Wilson College outside of Asheville. And then this year I took a ballad class at Kentucky Music Week, which is in Bardstown, Kentucky, and is being taught. They're all being taught by wonderful ballad singers. So the fun thing about Kentucky Music Week was in my class there were probably 10 or 12 women there, and most of them knew the ballads, but they all knew little different versions of the ballad. So one would sing one version and then somebody else would sing another version. So it's great fun to be getting back into old-time music and playing an instrument and singing ballads.
Cynthia, thanks so much for your call. I appreciate that, and I hope Carol Elizabeth gave you a good grade. I want to hear one more track before we let our guests go. This one is called Pretty Polly by Amethyst Kia. Many Appalachian ballads tell dark stories of murder, violence, and revenge, and this is one of them. Let's take a listen.
Oh, Polly, pretty Polly, come go along with me. Polly, pretty Polly, come go along with me. Before we get married, some pleasure to see. My mind, it is to marry and never part. My mind is to marry and never depart. First time I saw you, you wounded my heart. She jumped up behind him and away they did ride. She jumped up behind him and away they did ride, leaving her loved ones and family behind.
Ted Olson, talk for a moment about the presence of violent stories in the ballad tradition.
Sure. And the performers there, Amethyst Kia with Roy Andrade, both affiliated with East Tennessee State University. And Amethyst is one of the students of the program I mentioned earlier, along with the folks in Bill and the Bells, the track you played earlier. Yes, Pretty Polly is based on an actual murder that took place in 1726 in England. And there's a lengthy story that's conveyed in the liner notes to the album. But in essence, the story over time became truncated and you know, basically shortened for the ease of remembering. And some of the specifics of the original murder disappeared. But in essence, from today's perspective, it's still a good yarn about a murder that took place. It helps, I suppose, people in traditional cultures to kind of deal with the issues caused by violence and you know, people not treating one another civilly. So well, ballads have a
who doesn't like a true crime story in any genre?
Exactly.
Carol Elizabeth Jones, musician, Appalachian ballad singer. She's featured on the album Big Ben Killing. Thanks so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And Ted Olson, thanks to you again. We're talking about Appalachian ballads this hour. You can join the conversation. What themes are you hearing in these songs? We're at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Here's Tom Dula, sung by Laura Boosinger with the Kruger Brothers. I'm John Harwood, and this is On Point.
You met her on the mountain to make her your wife. You met her on the mountain and stabbed her with your knife. Then you dug her grave 4 feet long, dug it 3 feet deep, threw the cold clay over her, stomped it with your feet. Hang your head, Tom Dula, hang your head and cry. Killed little Laura Foster, and now you're bound to die.
Hello, just dropping in to remind you about Here and Now. We cover the day's most essential news with context so you know the why and what's next. A fast-paced snapshot of the world every day. Listen to Here and Now on NPR One or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I dreamed that the mines were all burning in fire. Every man was fighting for his life.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood. That's Explosion in the Fairmount Mines by John Lilly. We're talking about the ballad tradition of Appalachian music. You can join the conversation. What's your question about the Appalachian ballad tradition? How does it resonate with you today? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Ted Olson's with me from Asheville, North Carolina. He's a music historian, professor of Appalachian Studies at East Tennessee State University, and producer of the Grammy-nominated album Big Ben Killing, the Appalachian ballad tradition. And joining us now from New York is Elizabeth Leprell. She's a musician originally from Rural Retreat, Virginia, who's been performing Appalachian ballads since she was 11 years old. She's also a featured musician on the album Big Ben Killing. Well, Elizabeth, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John.
Elizabeth, let me start by asking you this question. And I ask as someone familiar with Southwest Virginia, done a lot of hiking with a backpacking ministry along the Appalachian Trail not far from Rural Retreat. How did you, as a young person, given the other musical temptations and distraction, become tied to ballad singing?
It's kind of funny to think of it in those words, temptations and distractions, like the evil pop music is going to come get you.
That's one way of thinking of it.
Take you away from the folk music, which I don't really agree with. I grew up with a lot of different music in my house. My parents were both traditional music fans, folk music fans, but they also, you know, my mom was a Beatles head back in the time when it was like the original Beatles heads were happening.
Were they musicians, your parents?
Yeah, but mostly around the house. My mom is a singer. She still sings. We sing together sometimes. My dad is fairly strictly living room, but he plays guitar and harmonica. Yeah, I got into ballads, I think partly because I really just loved to sing, and I loved these stories. And I loved that you could do them by yourself. I didn't really get into instrument playing until college. I was just so taken with the way these songs sounded. with one singer, and I got really swept into the stories.
And you went to William & Mary. They have a major focused on Appalachian music. Is that right?
Well, they generously allowed me to design my own major. So as far as I know, I'm the only person to graduate with a degree in Southern Appalachian traditional performance, which is what I called it.
That's fascinating. I understand that you are going to give us a live performance of a song called West Virginia Mind Disaster. Could you tell us a little bit about the song and then give us the pleasure of hearing it?
Absolutely. So about Gene Ritchie, who is we owe a lot of incredible ballad scholarship to, and a lot of beautiful tunes and songs. And the one that I'm going to sing was actually written by Gene Ritchie, which makes it a little bit maybe unusual for this album. We think of the tradition as being maybe on the verge of getting lost or something like that. But I think this song and other songs of Gene Ritchie's show us that even the creation of new songs, the tradition's not over, not even close. It's a very beautiful and hard to listen to sometimes song about something that's still happening, really, which is the safety of people in Appalachia being in jeopardy because of coal mining.
Oh,
say, did you see him? It was early this morning. He passed by your houses on his way to the coal. He was tall, he was slender, and his dark eyes so tender. His occupation was mining, West Virginia his home. It was just before noon, I was feeding the children. Then Mosley came running to bring us the news. Number 8 was all flooded. Many men were in danger. And we don't know their number, but we fear they're all doomed. I picked up the baby and I left all the others to comfort each other and pray for their own. There is Tommy, 14, and there's John, not much younger. And their time soon is coming to go down the dark hole. Oh, what will I say to his poor little children? And what will I tell his old mother at home? And what will I say to my heart that's clear broken? To my heart that's clear broken. If my darling is gone. If I had the money to do more than just feed them, I'd give them good learning, the best could be found. So when they growed up, they'd be checkers and weighers. And not spend their whole life in the dark underground. Oh, say, did you see him? It was early this morning. He passed by your houses on his way to the coal. He was tall, he was slender, and his dark eyes so tender. His occupation was mining. West Virginia, his home.
Wow, Elizabeth, that's beautiful. The word that comes to mind for me about that song, and maybe everyone, is haunting. It is a real piece of work.
It's an amazing song.
I want to go to one of our listeners. We've got Robert on the line from Nashville, Tennessee. Robert, welcome to On Point. Go right ahead.
Hi, John. I think I caught the show from the beginning, and one of your earlier callers, he had mentioned the opioid crisis. And I started thinking as you were playing Tom Dula and Pretty Polly, these are great songs, and the power of them, you know, they can't be denied. But in terms of bringing younger people into the music and keeping the music going, these old songs, they were essentially newscasts. And I was thinking of that caller from Kentucky who mentioned the opioid crisis, and Elizabeth just kind of touched on it. Where are the modern day songs about the opioid crisis that are like in this genre, things like that? I mean, there's plenty of stories still worth telling that, although there's nothing wrong with the old songs, they're wonderful. They're maybe the greatest songs ever written, but there could be room to bring in new subjects, new songs. I mean, the last time I saw Elizabeth play live with her partner, Anna, they had a laptop on stage with them playing this music, which I thought was brilliant. It was amazing. So I was just wondering what your guests had to say about that, or if there's any songs on this, on Big Bend, that are deal with current issues.
Robert, that's a terrific point. Elizabeth, is there a new body of work arising that is more contemporary, that deals with things affecting people your age?
Well, for me, just to speak personally, the old songs find a lot of relevance and a lot of resonance to me when I hear a song about an old problem. I relate it really quickly to a new problem. Whether that's, you know, something as simple as heartbreak or something a lot more complex. However, I also think that the legacy of ballads being created as newscasts to tell stories that people are thinking about specifically now, I think that though that legacy already does have its tendrils into a lot of modern American songwriting, you know, things that show up even on the country radio station. Although sometimes when I dial in, I wish it were less about trucks and more about, you know, the hard things like the caller speaking about.
But I guess your point is that the old lyrics can accomplish the same thing because people will naturally link them to contemporary problems.
That certainly happens for me, and I think it happens for other people, and that's why some of these songs do continue to have a resonance now. And I also think that legacy of songwriting is finding its way into contemporary songwriting.
All right, let's take another call. We've got Randy on the line from Hindman. Did I say that right, Randy? Hindman, Kentucky?
Hindman.
It's Hindman.
Okay. Randy, go right ahead.
Hi, John. Yes, I'm calling from the Hindman Settlement School here in eastern Kentucky, long tradition of preserving folk culture, and Cecil Sharp came through here in 1917 as well as many other places. But I was wondering about African-American influences. I haven't heard anything. I think of John Henry is probably one of the most famous ballads of all. I wonder if they touch on that in the album that they're producing.
Randy, thanks so much. Ted Olson?
Absolutely. We have a performance of John Henry on the album by the African-American singer Amethyst Kia, and we most definitely wanted to include all the different contributions to the Appalachian ballad tradition. So, yes.
And is the African-American contribution a major one?
Yeah, certainly. There are a number of ballads that have that are affiliated with the African-American tradition that emerged within kind of greater Appalachia. You know, it's maybe not the main line per se, but it's a very important kind of branch from the tree. And it's one that Appalachian people are very proud of. Appalachian music is, after all, a blended musical tradition from many different cultural influences. So we do talk a lot in this album about the British influences upon Appalachian balladry, but we also talk about the other cultural influences. And it is a quite diverse tradition.
Let's hear another track. We've got a tune by Grammy Award-winning musician David Holt. He sings the story of the notorious North Carolina outlaw. Here is Otto Wood, the Bandit.
Stepped in a pawn shop a rainy day. He had a quarrel with the clerk, they say. He pulled out his gun and struck a fatal blow. This is the way the story goes. Otto, why didn't you run? Otto's done dead and gone. Otto, why didn't you run when the sheriff pulled out that 44 gun?
Ted, tell us about Otto Wood and that song.
Well, Otto Wood was a notorious outlaw, and he was from the same neck of the woods as Tom Dula, in fact, Wilkes County, North Carolina. And he was a bad man. He was put in prison, and he was notorious for breaking out from prison. And he wrote his own autobiography in the 20s and kind of got public sympathy generated through his autobiography, where he kind of pled his case that he was, you know, maybe more innocent than the law had presented in his trial. And he was ultimately put into a lighter security prison, whereupon he broke out and was finally killed after committing another crime on the lam. And this was one example of the country music industry trying to incorporate the ballad tradition, because this, in fact, that David Holt sings here was a country song in the early 1930s. Shortly after Otto Wood's demise. And so it was included here. It's a much shorter ballad than some of the traditional British and early Appalachian ballads. But nonetheless, it's a storytelling tradition. And it was sung in the 1930s as a country song.
Elizabeth, let me quick answer, because we're running out of time. Is your career now entirely focused on ballads, or is that just one piece of your musical oeuvre?
I'd say yes, is the very short answer.
That's terrific. Well, listen, Elizabeth Leprell, musician featured on the Grammy-nominated album Big Ben Killing, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks so much for singing. Your voice is beautiful.
Thank you for having me.
Ted Olson, music historian, professor of Appalachian Studies at East Tennessee State University. He's the producer of the Grammy-nominated album Big Ben Killing, the Appalachian ballad tradition. Ted, thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, John.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. We're going to go out with The Parting Glass by Roseanne Cash. It's an old world song of departure from the album Big Ben Killing. I'm John Harwood, and this is On Point.
One more day to stay. But since it fell unto my lot that I should rise and you should not, I gently rise and softly call good night, and joy be with you all. Good night, and joy be with you all.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.